The way I read the Supreme Court ruling from Friday, the decision on gay marriage handed down a dramatic 5-4 ruling, as you know. It relied heavily on the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution. The majority opinion held in part, from my understanding, that a license issued for the exercise of a constitutional right in one state must be respected in all other states under the Equal Protection Doctrine. I find that to be a compelling argument, but for a different reason, because it seems to me that based on that logic, that those American citizens with a concealed pistol license have a more compelling argument for reciprocity than those with a marriage license. Marriage doesn't appear anywhere in the Constitution. The right to keep and bear arms certainly does. And as the court ruled in Heller versus D.C., that gun ownership is an individual right, and that right is also an enumerated right as written in the Second Amendment. And that was further defined in McDonald versus Chicago 2 years after Heller. So it would seem that states like Illinois, where, you know, we have to drive through, if you go through and read one of the part of this opinion on gay marriage, it says, well, you know, if a gay couple goes to an adjoining state and one of these people get ill, it puts them at a great disadvantage. Well, if we drive through Illinois with a concealed license permit and get pulled over, it puts us not in a bad position, it puts us in jail or prison. Dr. John Lott with us again today to talk about this. Dr. John Lott, of course, from the Crime Prevention Research Center. Doctor, welcome back to the program.
Great to talk to you.
So, you know, to me, reading this Supreme Court decision, there is little wiggle room. Of course, liberal thought and logic rarely commingle, and I'm sure they would find some reason that the 14th Amendment doesn't apply to, you know, gun licenses, but it must apply to marriage licenses, even though, you know, what they created in their decision was created out of whole cloth, from what I can tell. Any thoughts on this matter from you?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to go anyplace. The basic reason is you have five justices who subscribe to this type of state recognition of these rights. The problem is that four of the five of those, I mean, you got to get five of the nine overall to agree, but the problem is four of the five don't believe that there's an individual right to self-defense, or let alone an individual right to people owning guns, or let alone people being able to carry guns, I'm sure, even though the court hasn't decided the latter. And so, you know, being able to find five justices who both believe that this type of recognition of a right implies that other states have to recognize it, and having those justices also believe that there is an individual right to people having concealed handguns, I think are several bridges too far. It may be logical, I mean, even though the court hasn't made a decision on the Second Amendment yet with regard to concealed carry.
Well, there was no logical connection to create marriage is not defined in any way.
Yeah, look, I'm just telling you.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just telling you. I believe you're right that we've gotten into an era where the judges are just making policy decisions. A lot of they're
legislating.
Right, and you know, that makes it even less likely that they're going to pay attention to precedent. But what I'm saying is that you're going to have to find five judges who believe both points, and that states have to recognize these constitutional rights when other states grant permits or licenses, and also who believe that there's a constitutional Second Amendment right to carry a concealed handgun. And at most, you may have one justice who believes that.
I think that I wrote a column earlier this week, I guess over the weekend, and I just want your opinion on this, kind of a gut feeling thing, Doctor, and simply this. I think it's entirely possible the Second Amendment will be gone in my lifetime. And, you know, as much as we bring common sense and you bring common sense to the table and the statistics say this, and the Supreme Court has ruled in favor of gun rights in two big cases, you know, in the last handful of years at least, I still think that the Second Amendment seriously in danger in my lifetime, certainly in the lifetime of my children, of even existing in any form, because make no mistake, they don't want any private ownership of firearms at all.
Right. Well, I mean, there are many issues here, many dangers, so to speak. One is the two Supreme Court decisions that you mentioned were 5-4 decisions. Right now, two of the five justices who said that there's an individual right to self-defense and that it's a fundamental right and it's a fundamental right to have a gun to protect oneself, two of those five justices are about 80 years old. They'll be 80 within the next year. And, you know, if Hillary Clinton, for example, were to win the presidency, it seems extremely unlikely that both of those individuals would make it another 5 years or so from now. Surely they're not going to make it, both of them, make it another 8 years. And so if one of them or both are replaced, it's very clear that they would be replaced by somebody who has a very different view on that. And I think those decisions would be reversed. Beyond that, I mean, you have massive amounts of money being spent by Bloomberg, by George Soros, by a lot of very liberal foundations that are funding huge amounts of research and they're funding efforts. I mean, I testified this last spring in Wyoming and Nevada. Bloomberg on gun issues. Bloomberg had people being paid to put out flyers on people's cars in both states.
What's the real reason behind it?
Pardon?
I mean, when I say what's the real reason behind it, we've only got about a minute before we hit this first break here, but it's not about gun safety, I don't believe. I don't believe all these people are mobilized solely for gun safety. They use that as their focus point, but what is the real drive here? Why do they want to disarm everybody?
Well, I mean, with regard to safety, I mean, obviously Bloomberg thinks it's important to have armed bodyguards to protect himself. So he recognizes, at least in his own case, and at least for some of his employees, the benefits of using guns to protect people. But I think, one, he just doesn't trust others to be able to make those same decisions that he feels that he's able to make. And two, I think it's maybe more complicated than we can go into in 20 seconds, but I think gun owners are generally viewed as to Republicans what unions are to Democrats.
Yep.
And if Democrats think that they can make it so people don't own guns, I think in the long run they believe it will hurt Republicans.
41 after, hold that thought right there. Dr. John Lott here with us as he is each Tuesday, the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. And what just a tremendous amount of great information. We'll be right back on the Steve Gruber Show. Let me read you just a portion of what President Obama said at his eulogy, that is, for one of the people that was killed in Charlotte, Reverend Pinckney, in fact, the state lawmaker there in South Carolina. None of us should believe that a handful of gun safety measures will prevent every tragedy. It will not. People of goodwill will continue to debate the merits of various policies as our democracy requires. There are good people on both sides of these debates. Whatever solutions we find will necessarily be incomplete. But it would be a betrayal of everything that Reverend Pinckney stood for, I believe, if we allow ourselves to slip into a comfortable silence. Now let's focus on a couple of things there. Measures would prevent every tragedy. It will not, he says. And these solutions will be incomplete, necessarily incomplete. The point that he's making, if I'm just looking at this straightforward, which I believe I am, the whole point of expanded background checks, they won't work. And there'll be another tragedy. We're going to have to go farther. We're going to have to do more. We're going to have to take more guns. Dr. John Lott still with us. Doctor, I think that, you know, when you read his words, I don't even think it's vague. It's clear. It's incomplete. It's not going to solve the problem, but we must do it so that we can take the next step that follows it, is what he should continue to say. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I would make a stronger statement. He is implying that at least do some good. I'm not really sure there's any evidence that it would do some good. Look, we know that none of the mass shootings that have happened during his presidency would be stopped by having these expanded background checks. I don't know, in general, any cases that would be. just one of the many problems that you have with that is that these killers are planning these attacks at least 6 months, sometimes 2 years in advance. The guy who did the Charleston killing was planning it over 6 months in advance. You know, beyond that, you know, these like the Newtown killer, he stole the gun in the case of Charleston. Apparently he had already passed a background check, but he also stole the gun that he used from his mom. So, you know, it's I'm not really sure, you know, they use this to go and push for a law that is completely unrelated to the case that was there, and I'm sure you're right, they'll go and push for something more later on. The problem is that there are problems with these solutions that he has, which never get discussed. So, for example, when the president says many times that over 2 million prohibited people have been prevented from buying guns because of background checks, that's simply false. The way to talk about it is to say that there have been 2 million initial denials. There's a huge difference between those two. You know, the late Senator Ted Kennedy, as I've mentioned before on your show, there are 5 times where he was stopped from flying because his name was on the no-fly list. It's not because he was a terrorist. It's because somebody who had a similar name to him was a terrorist who they wanted to stop. Now, I assume the president wouldn't count those 5 times as 5 times we stopped a terrorist from flying. But that's the way he counts these initial denials, because virtually everybody, well over 99%, I believe, of these initial denials are false positives, just like in Senator Kennedy's case. And when you're dealing with that many people who may be stopped for months or longer, because a lot of people, especially now, the Obama administration's dragging its heels. You basically have to go and file a lawsuit and take legal action in order to find out what the final investigation showed that was there, but you know, which can take thousands of dollars. But the problem is that delays of months or longer can make the difference between whether somebody's able to go and defend themselves or not. We just saw a case in New Jersey a couple weeks ago where delays in approving a woman's background check made it so that she wasn't able to get a gun to protect her from an ex. She had just gone to the police station literally just 2 days before she was killed.
And 3 months after she had asked for that permit, it was 2 days before she was killed, she went back to say, "Where's my permit so I can go get a gun?" But it was like 3 months since she had originally applied. It's supposed to take 30 days, and she is dead.
Yeah, it was a little bit less than 2 months that she had been waiting. But, you know, 2 months, 10 days, 5 days, 2 days can be too long. When you're talking about 2 million cases here, you know, you're going to run into some cases like that, a significant number, even if it's small, of cases where people need to get a gun quickly for self-defense, and we're stopped by these so-called safety rules that were there. And the bottom line, and people can see this by going to our website at crimeresearch.org, is that there's no academic research that finds that these background checks reduce violent crime of any type, whether it's by economists or criminologists that have looked at this. Even public health studies just don't find that these laws reduce violent crime.
So if Hillary Clinton is elected, it's entirely possible that the Second Amendment will be gutted or eliminated, and to some extent before, well, less than 5 years from now.
Well, I mean, Obama's already appointed about half the federal judges in the country.
That's right.
You know, the Supreme Court only hears about 60-some cases, 64, 66 cases a year out of all the tens of thousands of cases that are filed each year. And so, you know, in most of the appeals court districts in this country, you're going to be going up against a majority of judges who have been appointed by Obama, and surely maybe even two-thirds or more in many appeals court districts that have been appointed by Democrats. And you know, about 95% of the time, you can guess how judges are going to rule on gun issues just by looking at their party affiliation. So, you know, for all practical purposes, in most of the federal courts in this country, your ability to go and win on these Second Amendment cases have been eliminated, and you know, he still has another year in office to get judges approved, and it's only going to get much worse if Hillary is elected.
There you have it, folks. Dr. John Lodge. You can find out more at crimeresearch.org. Crimeresearch.org. It's the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, Dr. John Lodge. Thank you for another sobering conversation.